All right, welcome everyone to today's Google Search Central SEO Office Hours Hangouts. My name is John Mueller. I'm a search advocate at Google here in Switzerland. And part of what we do are these office hour hangouts where people can join in and ask their questions around search, and we'll try to find answers. A bunch of questions were submitted on YouTube already, so we can go through some of those. But maybe, like always, if any of you want to get started with a question, we can go and look at those first. It looks like some of you already have your hands raised, so we can go through that. Let's see, Praveen.
Hi, John.
Hi.
So my question is about expired domains. So from past few weeks or say months, what I'm seeing is there are some sites that are ranking prominently in search. So when I look at their website, they don't look like a quality websites. And when I look their history, like through WebArchive, so it came to my notice that those domains usually like they belongs to Indian government agencies, some institutions, government institutions. So what the government institution did is they created new websites, and since they are government, they don't care about migrations or 3.0 and redirections and all that stuff. So they created their new websites and abandoned these old ones. They got expired, someone bought those domains and now created a blog kind of thing. So initially they started writing about government jobs, and then they started writing about education. Now they are writing about health topics like on vaccines, and they are ranking prominently on like best vaccine to take and all that stuff. So what can we do about such domains where I think they are just ranking based on their history, like the domain history and links, because they got links from sites like Wikipedia or some government official website. I can share a few links if you want, like if you want to have a look, like the kind of content they produce.
Sure. I mean, it's hard to say without looking at the specifics, but we do have systems in place that try to catch these expired domains and to figure out how to handle them better. But if you have some examples, I'm happy to pass them on to your team. It also sounds like something where you're not sure if it's spam or not. And for those kind of things, I would just also use a spam report form and kind of let us know from there what you've been seeing. And if it's not spam, then the web spam team will recognize that as well. But that's, I think, always a useful approach too.
Yeah, I think what Google recommends for like health topics is that they should be written by someone who's specialist or someone who's health specialist or doctors. But if you just go through, I just shared the links. If you just go through these links, there's no way you can figure out how this information based on what conclusion they are saying that this is the best or this is what you should do for vaccinations. It makes these sites, I think it's mainly because they have a domain history. So that's what boosting their rankings.
I don't know. It's hard to say because there are always so many factors that are involved with regards to kind of showing up in search. But I don't know. It's hard to say off the air.
Yeah. Okay. I just shared the examples. If you get time, please go
through them. Sure.
Thank you.
All right. Evan.
Right. Hi. Thank you for doing this. We have a thing we noticed back in June. We have a website that's been around for 9 years with a huge copyrighted database of 200,000 profiles that we've manually written over 9 years with a team of 40 writers. And there's always been websites that have copied our entire database, and just literally sometimes they copy our terms of use page and our team page that are blatant about it, but they copy our website. And we've noticed that they're showing up in search, sometimes above us. And sometimes they might copy like, maybe if we have 700 words on the page, 250 words, and then they'll add additional machine text that are pages longer. Or other times they'll just copy it directly. And again, it's never been an issue because we've ranked ahead of them, but lately they've been ranking ahead of us with our copyrighted content. And I think the most concerning thing we noticed is that when we kind of do a quote search and search for two of our sentences in Google, the like five or six copycat sites show up, and then our site doesn't show up, and it says in order to show you the most relevant results, we've omitted some entries. So it's almost as if it reversed, and now it thinks we're the copycat, even we're the original source. So we've went down the DMCA path, but it's hard to do that at a full domain level. And we accidentally de-indexed our site 2 months ago when we launched a different language. So we're wondering if maybe that one day we de-indexed, once we re-indexed it, Google thought that these copycat sites were the original source. So we're running in circles. We got two of the sites removed via DMCA web host, but then they just moved to another host. So, we are the source. It's a copyrighted database, but other sites are ranking ahead of us with our direct content. So we're kind of running in circles. So,
yeah, I think in general, the DMCA approach is probably the correct approach to take there, because that's kind of the most direct process that involves that. And it is something that is on a per URL basis primarily. So if you have a lot of, I don't know, or if a site has a lot of copies of your content, then it's kind of a lot of work to get that done. But that's kind of the ideal approach, because that's, I don't know, the official path for you to say, it's like, well, this is my content, and it's not their content, and I can prove it to you, kind of thing. With regards to kind of being de-indexed for a brief time, I don't think that should play a role there. That's something that's like, these kind of things happen on technical level from now every now and then, and sometimes legitimate sites do something wrong, and they go offline for a day or so, and that fixes itself automatically again. It's not something that would be held against the site.
And how do you DMCA if they keep, once their new domains pop up? So once you get it blocked, they move it to another domain. It's kind of like a never-ending game. So how do you kind of let Google ultimately know that you're the initial source? Some of these other sites might have a zero authority, like random domains, and we have an 8 authority or 10 authority, been around for 9 years. So how do we kind of, I don't know, fix the error, if you will, of Google not recognizing that we're the original source, you know, because it keeps happening on new domains once we snap them.
Yeah. I don't think there is like this one trick that you can do to say, it's like, well, this is always our content. So that's one thing to keep in mind. The other thing I usually try to recommend is to focus on sites that are actually a problem for your site, in terms of like, are they actually ranking above your site or not? Because it's very easy to go and search for an exact copy, and you'll find tons of copies on the web. But just because those copies exist doesn't mean they're a problem for your website.
Okay. And last question on that, how about the omitted results when we like search two sentences in quotes, and they show 8 copycats, but then ours is actually one omitted. That was like the most glaring concern, because Google's almost saying, this is a supplemental site we're not going to show, but it's showing. So it's, again, it's at the bottom being omitted, but the copycats that are just blatantly copying are being shown. So how do you know?
Yeah, I think that's more of a technical thing with regards to kind of how you search. So that's something that, depending on the type of query that you do, it's possible to trigger that. But it doesn't mean that Google thinks your site is a copy.
Okay.
So that's I don't know. There are a few of those things around search where if you search in a very specific way, then it comes out as like, well, Google's showing this, and it probably means that. But it's just, well, Google systems showing you something doesn't mean that it has any additional meaning past that.
Okay, and then for the DMCA, since it's so hard to do it URL by URL, if you're talking about 200,000 unique pieces of content, you know, I know there's an email you can submit to Google, like a more formal request on the entire URL, like database, because it's hard to do it one by one, obviously. So, you know, how would you kind of like suggest scaling that if there's like 5 sites that are a problem? 200,000 URLs per site. You know, that's a lot of clerical work, you know.
I don't know. I don't have any experience with that side. So,
okay.
I mean, that's something where I don't know if we have a contact address for that. It might be that it's primarily through the form.
Yeah.
My understanding was that if we recognize that sites submit a lot of DMCA complaints, then we'll reach out and see if there are more scalable ways to do that. But I don't know what the actual process is there.
Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Sure.
Thank you.
All right, Alistair.
Hi, John. How are you?
Hi.
Thanks again for doing this. I've got one question which is in the comments, and apologies if this has already been asked in a previous Hangout, but I own a website called Healthy Principles, and it's .co.uk/cctld. Should we be writing in British English or American English? We've sort of switched from British English to American English because about 60 to 70% of the traffic is from the US. What's your advice?
I don't think it matters. It's totally up to you, and something where I would focus more on what your users want to read, and less on kind of the SEO aspect there. I don't think, for example, that we have any classifier that tries to figure out, like, is this written in British English or not? But rather, we try to understand the English content the way that we find it and kind of figure out how we should show that relevantly. And the kind of exact phrasing and spelling that you use on your site is more a matter of you presenting your content in a way that your users want to accept that and want to be able to work with that. And so from that point of view, like, totally up to you.
Thank you.
Cool. Andres.
Hi, John. I just wanted to ask about how do you feel offline branding impacts SEO organic rankings. To put a bit of context, we are working on a highly competitive transactional market, and we are, let's say, getting close to being in the page one and stuff like this. But we are clearly at a disadvantage in terms of brand awareness. There are some very large brands in our market. And I wanted to know a little bit how you feel that offline, especially offline brand advertising, can affect that.
I don't think it affects SEO directly, but it is something where if people search for your brand because they recognize your brand, then essentially you have no competition, right? Because your site is by far going to be the most relevant one. If people are searching for your company and you are that company, then it's almost like a navigational query, what we call it, where people want to go to a specific page and they're just like entering something into Google to get to that page. So that's something where I kind of think building up some kind of brand awareness amongst your users and having a brand that is easily findable, that can help in the long run, in that all of this kind of branded traffic that you get, that's traffic that's not kind of going to fluctuate as our algorithms change, because if people are searching for your site, they will always want to find your site. And if our algorithm shows something else, then it's almost like a problem in our algorithms. Whereas if people are searching for kind of the generic kind of product that you have, whether we show your site or another one, the search quality engineers on our side, they can argue about that, and there is no correct answer for that. But if you kind of build up that brand awareness and have a certain level of kind of branded traffic to your site, then at least that traffic is something that will be fairly stable. And I wouldn't see this as something where if you have branded traffic, then suddenly you'll rank better for non-branded traffic, but more like, well, the different sources of traffic.
Okay, and how do you think that Google deals with non-branded traffic, where there are brands that are basically expected by the user to be on top. I mean, like from our position, if I understand it from just a pure theoretical perspective, if the top five positions are kind of expected there to be some brands, how can we get into those places? Because I guess we will always be at least in a disadvantage and in a propensity to click on our search result. Do you think that plays any role at all?
I don't think so. I don't think it's the case that for most kind of queries that we would have any system in place that would say for this non-branded query we should always show these other brands. I can think of like one situation where I've seen something similar happen, but that's something where essentially our systems recognize the brand as almost being a synonym for the non-branded term, which is something that from our point of view, I would call that a bug on our side, but it is sometimes something where people just like purely associated a specific brand with a specific kind of item. And that's something where it's less a matter of, well, you have to do some SEO tricks to get around that, but you kind of really have to build up the awareness that, well, actually, there are multiple brands that are active in this space, and like people should be searching for other stuff as well.
Okay.
Cool. I don't know if that made a lot of sense, but yeah, I think for the most part, I wouldn't see it as a given that we always show brands for non-branded queries, and it's definitely not the case that these would be kind of like a fixed set of brands that we would always show.
Okay, no, but I think just in general, like if the algorithms are kind of trying to give the best result for a user query, and it happens to be, you know, that the users want to see those brands, that can kind of in the long term, it self-teaches that some of those brands need to be on the top positions.
I don't think our algorithms would learn it in the sense that we always need to show those brands for those queries. I think that would be like an extreme exception that we would maybe pick one or something like that to see as a synonym. But it is something where over time, if it's a very competitive area, then these sites have built up kind of a really strong and stable foundation, and kind of breaking into that is hard. And that is something for smaller or newer sites where you almost have to think about, well, is it worthwhile to take on these brands for these queries, or should we find something smaller where we can be kind of the king of our niche first and kind of grow from there? And kind of picking that is almost more of a business decision than an SEO decision, I think.
Okay, cool. Thanks a lot.
Sure. Rupesh.
Hi, John. My question is regarding the updated ago date in the SERP snippets. Like, we show that 7 days ago or 2 days ago. So how does Google assumes that it is updated 2 days ago? Like, we submit it through the meta tag article modified and through the schema also. But still, like, if we have updated the page yesterday, it is still showing like it is updated 2 days ago, whereas in case our of competitors, it is showing that updated yesterday only. So like my question is, how does Google determine when a page is updated?
We use multiple factors to try to figure out which dates are relevant for a page. So it's not just the metadata on the page, but we try to figure out, like, has there actually been a significant change on the page? And we have a Help Center article, I think, on this topic. So I would check that out. One thing that you should also keep in mind is that it should also be something visible on the page. So if you just change the date on a page, then that's something where, like, we need to really recognize that you've made significant changes there so that we can show that to users and say, well, actually, something significant happened on this page 2 days ago or 1 day ago or whatever. And kind of all of that needs to come together. And it's very possible that for some pages, we don't pick that up. So that's something where I would not say that it's a given that even if you do everything right, we will use the date that you give us. Sometimes there are situations where our algorithms just pick something else regardless.
Regarding the visible dates, if there are multiple dates in the page, like our main article, we have an updated date, but there are listing of other news articles below the article, like we show related news. In that also, we have the date. So like by any chance, Google can pick that date also?
It can happen, but usually because we try to take so many factors into account, we try to find a date that has kind of support across multiple factors. So if it's just a random date on a page, then probably we will ignore that unless the actual date is also positioned as a random date on the page. Like if you can't like present it in a way that is clear to us that this is really the date that you want to use, then we might have to guess. And that's something where the metadata comes into play a little bit. Also where things like time zones sometimes play a role, where if you say, well, it changed today on this date, but you're in a time zone that is very far off from where Google is crawling perhaps, then Google might say, well, you said this date, but we think it's a date later. And that's more because of the different time zones. So for the kind of the metadata on the page, also make sure that the time zones are correct. If you have dates and times on a page as well, mentioning the time zone there in the text is also a good idea.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure. Faisal.
Hi, John.
Hi.
Thanks in advance. This is going to be a multi-parter. So we have a domain verified through DNS verification, and it contains several subdomains. We also have the individual subdomains verified through URL prefixes. And when we are comparing the data, the theme brushes and clicks between those two different property setups for one specific domain, we're getting quite a big delta in the impressions and clicks, somewhere between like 40% to 80%. So we're wondering if maybe there are any suggestions or theories on why that might be the case. This isn't true of all setups like that. We have some domains that don't show that discrepancy, but this one particular one does.
Sometimes that's pretty tricky. It's hard to say offhand exactly what is happening there. What usually plays a role is, on the one hand, we have queries that we filter out, which might be more visible in some domains or less visible in others. And on the other hand, we have a limited amount of data that we keep per day, essentially, for each of these properties. So if you have a domain-level property and it has a lot of different kinds of data for every day, then it's very possible that we will trim that and kind of keep the top set. And usually what you would see is that the overall sum is still correct. But if you look at the tables, then you might see differences there. So that's my guess is like one of those things is happening there. What I would do in a case like this where you see these kind of differences is use the more specific property and use those metrics instead.
Okay. Yeah, we sort of went through the documentation for the performance reports, and it mentioned that some long tail data loss might occur if you are looking at the grouping by query or page. You mentioned some of the queries might filter out. And I understand like some of them are anonymized for privacy and several reasons. Could you sort of give a definition of what long tail data means, though? Is that the same as the anonymized queries, or are we just like, reaching a hard limit on how much data we can store?
It's hard to say offhand without looking at the site, but usually with regards to long tail data, if you're looking at a really large site or at a site that has a lot of different kinds of data for every day, then it's more a limit of the number of specific data points that we have per day. So if you have a lot of different search impression types, or if you have a lot of different queries that lead to a lot of unique pages, then kind of all of that multiplied essentially means that we have a lot of data entries per day, and we have to cap those kind of for performance and stability reasons. So that's probably what you're seeing there. And we call that more long-tail data because it tends to be data that has either low impressions or low clicks. And hence, we try to focus on the more important data for the site.
OK. When you say data entries, is that like is the best way to consider like, a large site just the total volume of impressions, total like URLs that you have, clicks? Like, is there like a specific metric that like correlates really well with large, or
is it not still- really? Not really. It's because of the way that the data is collected. Like, if there are a lot of unique URLs or a lot of unique queries that lead to the site, then all of that kind of multiplies out. Or if you have a lot of unique kind of search features that are being triggered, then all of that also plays a role in that.
OK. So in the documentation, it says that the long tail data loss affects the table. It mentions that for both the queries and the pages. Can we get around that through like filtering for specific directories or queries? Like, will that pull more data in? Or could we use something like the API to pull that data? Would that be better?
I would definitely try it with the API. I mean, especially with the larger site, then with the API, it's easier to get the full set of data and then to kind of just put together either some dashboard on your side to pull out the details that you want. But I would also, especially when you're looking at multiple properties within a really large domain, I would try to kind of focus on the data for the individual properties. So instead of going to the highest level view, kind of the domain level, then actually go down to the subdomain or whatever you have there and look at the data there. Because for each individual properties, we tend to track the data a little bit more accurately.
OK. I guess last question here. Like, would a subdomain, if it had like some canonicalization issues, would that affect how the data is aggregated between the two?
It could as well. So we try to use the canonicals for individual URLs, and we map that to the properties then. So if you have something like www and non-www, and it's kind of fluctuating between those different versions, then on a domain level, that would all still be in the same domain. But on a kind of a lower level, subdomain level, that would be different subdomains. So that would be tracked individually.
Sorry, could you elaborate on that last point? What do you mean by tracked individually?
So if a page on your site is essentially fluctuating between www and non-www, then if you have those two verified separately in Search Console, then you will see the data sometimes in one property and sometimes in the other property. Because of the way the canonical changes. Usually, like on a larger site, the canonicals don't change that much. So it's less something that you would see. But it can happen, especially if it's an older site that was maybe not created in the cleanest way possible, in that the internal links are sometimes with HTTP, sometimes with HTTPS, and sometimes with www or not. Then sometimes it happens that we kind of move URLs around. But it's fairly rare for modern sites, I'd say.
OK. And just last question here. We've talked about large sites quite a bit. Is there some sort of like a threshold or some point where we could say like 100 million impressions or
not URL or something like that? Not really. So it's like I mentioned, it's more a matter of kind of the unique entries that you'd have. And it can be the case that a site gets a lot of impressions, a lot of clicks, but it's all focused on a smaller set of URLs. Or it's focused on something like, I don't know, the top 10,000 or top 100,000 URLs. And in cases like that, then despite it having a ton of impressions, it doesn't mean that it has a ton of unique data entries per day. So that makes it a bit tricky to kind of find a threshold where we'd say, well, this is from where you'd need to start looking. And that's kind of why we frame it as the long tail data in the help center, because there is no kind of absolute number where we can kind of apply that.
Great, thank you.
Sure. It looks like a bunch of you still have your hands raised, but I need to go through some of the submitted questions as well. We'll definitely have more time for live questions as well along the way. But just to make sure that people who submitted questions don't get their questions lost completely. Let's see. I read online that people said that they've seen an uplift after the June core update. They've also seen one for July as well. For us, it wasn't the same. What could have reverted in July? Could it be related to speed? As far as I know, these were essentially separate and unique updates that we did. So we call them both core updates because they affect the core of our ranking systems. But that doesn't mean that they affect the same core parts of the ranking system. So from that point of view, it's not the case that if you see a change during one of these core updates, you will always see a change during the other one as well. So from there, I wouldn't assume that they have to be related. With regards, could it be related to speed? Things can definitely be related to speed, because the whole page experience update is something that I think started rolling out in June. So in July, you might still see some changes there. But the core update itself isn't something that I think is related to the page experience update. That's kind of a separate thing. Does Google look at the amount of customers and or reviews a website has to rank it higher in the search results? Why are some pages getting indexed after more than 2 weeks? Is it because the crawlers don't deem these pages strong enough to index them faster than 2 weeks? So as far as I know, we don't use the number of customers or reviews when it comes to web search with regards to ranking. Sometimes we do pull that information out, and we might show it as kind of a rich result on the search results. It might be that for the Google My Business side of things, maybe that's taken into account more. I don't have much insight there. But with regards to normal web search, we don't take that into account. With regards to getting indexed after more than 2 weeks, it's really hard to say. Usually, that's a mix of either technical issues that we can't crawl all of the content that quickly, and quality issues that our systems are not that interested in crawling the content so quickly. And kind of figuring out where in between there your site sits is sometimes a bit tricky, but sometimes it's also easier to figure out, especially if you can determine that from a technical point of view, your site is actually pretty fast. So that's something where sometimes it makes sense to take a step back and think about the quality more than just the technical aspects. What are some things that our webmasters can do to trigger site-wide reevaluation from a quality point of view, like when you change domains, or when does Google say, OK, let's try to collect new signals and see whether the site is better from a quality point of view? I don't think there is anything technical that you can do to trigger kind of a reevaluation. And usually that's also not necessary, because essentially our systems reevaluate all the time. And they look at the content that we found for a site. And over time, as we see that change, we will take that into account. So that's not something where you kind of have to do something manually to trigger that. The one time where we do have to kind of reconsider how the site works is if a site does a serious restructuring of its website, where it changes a lot of the URLs and all of the internal links change, where maybe you move from one CMS to another CMS and everything changes and looks different, then from a quality point of view or from a technical point of view, we can't just keep the old understanding of the site and of the pages, because everything is different now. So we kind of have to rethink all of that. But that's also not something that is triggered by anything specific, but rather it's just, well, lots of things have changed on the site. And even to kind of incrementally keep up, we have to do a lot of incremental changes to reevaluate that. Our website's posts are being indexed after 1 week. The site is old and mobile friendly. When I submit URLs and inspection tools, it shows it's crawled by Google smartphone. But in the about section, the indexing crawler is shown as Googlebot desktop. Does this mean the smartphone bot is crawling the URL and the desktop bot is indexing this URL? Is this the reason behind the indexing delay? This would not be a reason for any kind of indexing issues. I don't know offhand why you might see kind of this kind of mix of desktop and mobile crawlers there. It might just be that Search Console is essentially saying, well, by default, with the inspection tool, we'll just use the mobile Googlebot. In practice, we always crawl with both of these crawlers. It's just a matter of like how much we crawl and index with any of these crawlers. So usually, you'll see something like 80% is coming from mobile Googlebot and 20% maybe from desktop Googlebot. And that kind of ratio that is essentially normal and doesn't mean that things are slower than anything else. Is there any consistent reports on AMP tanking a website's performance? How consistent is the page experience report in regards to its interpretation of AMP pages? I'm not aware of anything where using AMP would cause problems with a website's performance. But it sounds like you're looking at something very specific. So my recommendation there would be to go to the help forum and try to post the details of what exactly you're seeing there and try to get some input on that. But for the most part, using AMP on a website is a great way to get kind of that speed boost without doing a significant amount of work. So I wouldn't see that as something that would be causing problems with a website unless the AMP integration is somehow broken in a weird way. Then I think the verification one, we talked about that. I've been using Search Console for my employer's website and was wondering what's the best way to track the value of a blog's value on an e-commerce site. It's drawing majority of the web traffic, with most of those being first-time visitors. However, blog visitors notoriously don't always buy on initial visit to a website, but do return later and are truly the first step in the conversion path. Employers want to see concrete data. I don't know. So to me, this sounds like something that would be best looked at with regards to analytics. And there are different approaches that you can take with analytics. I think the overall topic area is attribution modeling, where you try to attribute individual steps that are being taken on your website to maybe figure out like where is this coming from, or what parts of a website are kind of contributing to a conversion, to a sale, those kind of things. But that's something where I think Search Console can't really help that much. And from a search point of view, we don't have that much insight into what happens within your website and like who comes and goes within your website in search. So you'd almost need to kind of look at that, maybe with an analytics expert, maybe with the analytics help forum, and try to get some input there. But that usually is something that people can figure out. So. How many affiliate sponsored links are safe or good to have on a single page? Is there a perfect ratio of links to article length to maintain here? There is no limit. That's something from our side. It's not that we're saying that affiliate links are bad or problematic. It's more a matter of, well, you actually need to have some useful content on your page as well. So that's kind of the angle that we take there. The amount of affiliate links that you have on a site, that's like totally irrelevant. The kind of ratio of links to article length is also totally irrelevant. But essentially, what we need to find is a reason to show your site in search for users who are looking for something. And that reason is usually not the affiliate link, but the actual content that you provide on those pages. So from that point of view, kind of trying to optimize the affiliate links or trying to hide the affiliate links or whatever you're trying to do there, I think is almost like wasted effort, because that's not what we care about. We care about the content and kind of why we would show your pages in the first place. And if the content of your page is essentially just a copy of a description from a bigger retailer site, then there's no reason for us to show your site, even if you had no affiliate links. So you really need to kind of first have that reason to be visible in the search results. And then how you monetize your site or what links you place there, that's essentially irrelevant. The CCTLD, I think we talked about, there's a site that ranks in top positions for multiple high search volume city plus service without providing unique content. They just duplicate their pages and score high, even when there are other websites that seem to provide better content. They don't have any high-quality backlinks or internal links on these city pages. Is there any reason they score high on Google? I don't know. It's hard to say just based off of your description there. It's also something where we take into account a lot of different signals when it comes to search. And it can be the case that a site does some things really terribly and does other things really well. And in the search results, we might still show that site fairly visibly. So that's something where just because one site does one thing bad doesn't mean we will never show it in search. And usually, this is something where a lot of sites kind of profit from, because nobody really knows exactly what they should be doing perfectly. And it's something where everyone gets input on what they should be doing from various people. And sometimes you listen to the wrong people, and you do kind of something stupid along the way. And just because you do some things incorrectly or suboptimally shouldn't mean from our side that we shouldn't show your site at all. So this is something that we see all the time, especially with smaller businesses, in that they listen to something or some blog online that says, oh, you need to put your keywords in hidden text on your pages, and search engines will fall for that. And they go off and do that. And essentially, that's against our webmaster guidelines. So theoretically, we could go in there and say, like, oh, you did this one thing wrong. We're going to remove your site from search. But it's a lot better for us to go in and say, well, we recognize you did this thing, and we can ignore it, and we'll focus on the rest of your site instead. And if the rest of your site is OK, then there's no reason for us not to show it. So it's not the case that you have to get everything perfect in order to be visible in search. But rather, it's like lots of things can add up. And you can do some things really well, and we'll still show you in search, even if you do other things kind of suboptimally. So I think that's always tricky when you look at other people's sites and kind of say, well, they're using hidden text or using this other technique that is against their guidelines. Therefore, they shouldn't be visible or ranking above me, because that's almost like way too simplistic. We had a speculative question regarding the recent confirmation of deleting redirects after a year, where you quote, this time frame allows Google to transfer all signals to new URLs, including recrawling and reassigning of links on other sites that point to your old URLs. We understood this to mean that all offsite authority is passed after a year, even once deleted. What would happen if the old page that was redirected previously 200s again? Like, essentially, would a term come back? Would both pages benefit from an offsite link? No. So essentially, what happens with regards to redirects is we will forward those signals as best that we can. And what happens with regards to external links going to those pages, we'll forward those external links as well. And if that redirect is gone at some point, then essentially, we will have kind of two pages, and they will rank individually. So it's not the case that you can just redirect, and suddenly you have two times as much value on your website. But rather, it's like, well, we take whatever value goes into the website, we follow the redirects, and we point it at the final URLs there. And if you remove redirects, then that kind of chain is broken there, and it remains somewhere else. So just kind of like taking a site, adding redirects, and then after a year dropping those redirects and hoping that suddenly you have two times as much value on your site, that's not how it works. So from that point of view, I don't think you would see any value in doing that. The main reason for this is less to kind of prevent abuse around this, but rather like people change their minds all the time. And it can happen that you move a URL from one location to another, and then some point later on you say, well, actually, I want to have the other URL index as well, or I want to kind of revert that change and go back to the previous URL. And we need to be able to kind of go back and understand a site again, even after it had redirects for a while. OK, looks like we're coming kind of close to time. So maybe I'll switch back to live questions from you all. I also have a bit more time afterwards if any of you want to ask even more questions, so we can go through some of that too. Let me just one quick question here that I also see out here, a site that I looked into briefly with regards to a coupon site that is mentioned there. With regards to kind of indexing and being shown in search, one of the things I noticed there was that this is like a really low quality site. So the person who asked this question, I would recommend definitely not focusing on technical things, but really focusing on the quality overall first and making sure that the quality of the site itself is actually a lot better. Before you worry about things like how quickly Google is crawling and indexing pages. OK, let's see. I think Mano, I think you're next up.
Hi, John.
Hi.
I've got a couple of questions. Let me start with the first one. So basically, Search Console actually reported some static files as affecting the performance. And actually, we minified those files and also added a disallow rule on the robots text. I'm not sure if that's the correct thing to do. So once we done that, actually, what happened was the mobile usability was affected, and then it was flagged saying that it affects mobile usability. So just wanted to know what is the best practice and how we should go about doing that.
What kind of files were they? It's like CSS?
JavaScript files.
OK. Yeah, so I think with the robots text disallow, essentially you're preventing us from looking at those files. And if those files are necessary for the rendering of a mobile page, then we won't be able to render those mobile pages to recognize that it's mobile friendly. So that's probably why you're seeing that shift with regards to kind of mobile friendliness in the report there.
Right. And so should we actually even add the disallow rule for those, or should we just keep them open?
No, I think for the most part, we recommend making JavaScript CSS files crawlable so that we can render the pages. We won't index them individually. So it's not that we'll say, oh, this JavaScript file is suddenly a text file. We should show it in search, because that doesn't make sense. But we need to be able to access them so that we can render the pages and see what they look like.
The next question is about using disallow versus on robots text versus using no index. What's the difference, and what are the different use cases?
We don't support no index in robots text. So that's kind of like the main difference there. So essentially, if you're talking about then the no index robots meta tag on a page versus robots text. The robots text file prevents us from crawling a URL, but it doesn't prevent us from indexing the URL alone, which is a kind of a weird situation. But essentially, there are pages that are blocked by robots text, but they're still useful for users. And we don't know what is on the page, but we might be able to recognize they're actually still useful for users. So it can happen that we index a page just purely by the URL. And based on the anchor text of links pointing to that URL, we can still show that in search. And we essentially don't know what is on the page. But we see that lots of people are recommending it for this one particular topic. So we might go along with that. With regards to the robots meta tag no index, if we can crawl the page and we see that no index meta tag, then we won't index that page. Then it won't be shown in search. So in practice, for most normal pages on a website, if it's blocked by robots text, then we won't show it for normal searches, because we usually have more relevant content from your website to show. If you search specifically for that page, then we will still show it. If you do like a site query, then we might still say, well, actually, like for this particular URL you're looking for, we have this page. So those are kind of the differences there.
Sure. And what does it mean when the Search Console says indexed, though blocked by robots text? I think it links with the same response that you gave before.
Yeah, exactly. That's that, where we essentially index the page without knowing what the content is. And it's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just kind of like for your information, if you wanted to have the page indexed and ranked based on its content, then with that setup there, that wouldn't be possible.
Right. And if you want to change a link on the website, that is basically to rename the URL, how can you do that without affecting the Search Console ratings? Is there a way to do it faster?
Essentially, you would just set up the redirects there. So you would redirect from the old URL to the new one. And that's something that our systems follow. And that should for the most part, just be fine.
Sure. Great. Thanks, John.
Sure. All right, Michael.
There, good. OK, sorry. I have a quick question about images, which seem to have been a little bit of a hot topic this week.
OK.
So if a site uploaded a number of images over the years without being aware of like the importance of file sizes, and it slowed up the site, and then someone like myself pointed out to them this issue, could they go back and optimize the same image upload it again as a smaller file and use the same original alt attribute, or do they have to change the alt title?
They can just change it. So it's something where essentially when we, I mean, what happens in practice is with images, we tend not to recrawl them that often. So it might be a while for us to actually recognize that the image file has changed, even if it's just a matter of like recompressing or kind of tweaking the settings. That might take a while. And we would tend to pick that up based on the crawling of the web page. So kind of the landing page, if we recrawl that often, then we'll see, oh, this image is still embedded here. And every now and then, we'll double check the image file to see how that is set up. And if the image file changes, then the image file changes. And we can kind of reprocess that. If the alt text changes on the page, we can also include that a little bit faster, because the HTML pages tend to be recrawled more often. If you need to have an image changed quicker in search, maybe there's something in the image that you don't want to have shown in the search results, then I would recommend using a different URL for that image so that when we crawl the HTML page, we clearly see, oh, this old image is no longer on this page, but there's a new image here. We should check out this new image URL.
Yeah, and this is basically to just make it faster, you know, sites faster. So.
Yeah. And with regards to speed, it's not something where we need to have the kind of the optimized image indexed. But that's something where essentially for the Core Web Vitals, we use the real user metrics. So we see kind of what people are actually seeing on the page. And that's independent of what we have indexed for that page.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Sure. Carmen.
Hello everyone. Hello, John. Good morning.
Hi.
So practically, I'm working on the website structure. It is a company in the finance sector, specifically mortgage. And two questions. So building the new structure, I have two options. So one is build the hierarchy using pages. Is a CMS in WordPress. So I can do that and have different labels for my main products and have a kind of categorization by using pages. Then I have set option B, which could be rebuild our CMS in WordPress and have a built-in categorization. That is my choice. And however, yes, I have these two options at the moment. So the two questions are, what will be the main impact by using pages over categorization and build a new category on the CMS? And the second question is how if I rebuild the CMS, what will be the main benefit following the EAT best practice for Google?
Okay. So I think first of all, I would not worry about kind of the pages versus posts and categories question. From our point of view, we see all of these as HTML pages, and how they're classified within your server and within your CMS is essentially totally up to you. It's not something that our algorithms would care about. So from that point of view, I would choose whichever setup is easier for you to maintain, is easier for you to make sure it's fast and usable. All of kind of the almost like the non-SEO factors, and focus it based on that. And that's something where sometimes using WordPress makes sense, sometimes using another CMS makes sense, sometimes a kind of a mix makes sense, but that's essentially purely on your side with regards to how you can maintain the content, how you can make sure it's fast, it's secure, all of those things. The one place where I think I would keep an eye out on is if you're migrating from one setup to a different setup, then that's something where you essentially have to think about all of the usual site migration things. So kind of making sure that you know which the old URLs are and the new ones, making sure you have all the redirects in place, fixing the internal linking, all of that kind of plays into that as well as everything that is on the page as well. Especially if you're moving from one CMS to another, you'll have things like headings are suddenly different, or the images are embedded in different ways, and suddenly you have, I don't know, maybe captions below the image instead of just an alt text for the image. And all of those are essentially on-page SEO things that you can do well or that you might do kind of badly. And then it's less a matter of like which CMS is better, but rather which setup is the optimal one for you, and how are you migrating between those setups.
Perfect. Thank you.
Sure. Let's see, Lucas.
Hi, John. I've been in the last Webmasters Hangout also and asked you about our Dutch homepage, which isn't in the homepage anymore. I don't know if you can remember. I also posted the question in the YouTube comments. And we couldn't really find a reason why this specific page isn't indexed anymore. I also checked the troubleshooting reports on supportgoogle.com, and I just couldn't find a reason why this one page isn't in the index anymore. So maybe afterwards you and your team could have a look into deeper look into this, and
sure. Maybe you can just post the URL in the chat here, then yeah. I can pick that up. I can't guarantee that we'll be able to look into it or that we'll be able to do something there, but I'm happy okay. to try to see what we can find there.
Okay, I also posted this in the community forum, so I just post the link of that in the chat.
Okay, cool.
Thank you very much.
Sure. Okay, let me take a break here with regards to the recording. It's been great having all of your questions here, and I hope if you're watching this on YouTube, you find this recording useful, and maybe we'll see you in one of the future Hangouts as well. All right, with that, let me just pause.